9, and would you stand as we hear the word together this morning? The beginning of Mark's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 9. At that time, Jesus came from Nazareth in Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. Just as Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." At once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness, and he was in the wilderness for 40 days, being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals, and angels attended him. Church, this is the word of the Lord. Amen. You may be seated. This was the place, right here at this riverbank on the Jordan River. This was the place where generations ago, you can read the story in the book of Joshua, chapters 3 and 4. This was that place where Joshua led the people of God after they had been delivered from slavery in Egypt, after they had suffered for 40 years wandering in the wilderness. They finally came to this place. They crossed this river, the Jordan River, to make it into the land of promise, the land that God had for them, the land that God had waiting for them. And for the people of God, getting to this river, after all that they had been through, getting through this river, it meant for them, it meant everything. When they got to the other side of the river, when they crossed and got to the other side, to the land of promise, the land that they had been waiting for all along, when they finally got across this river to the other side, there was a future. There was freedom. There was life. And there was home. This place was where that had happened generations before. And that's one reason why it was such a fitting place for John to be here doing this very important work. Early in the morning, sun rising, birds chirping, water lapping, the wild man John stood ankle deep in the water of the Jordan, preaching, crying out about the kingdom of God. And a crowd came together on the creek bank. Now, Mark tells us, if you read back up in verse 5, Mark tells us that everybody was there. He says it. He says everyone was there, that all of the Judean countryside was there, and that everyone from Jerusalem was there. Mark says that Jerusalem was a ghost town. It got just empty of all the people, that everybody came out into the middle of the nowhere on the riverbank of the Jordan. Now, folks, I don't know if literally everyone was there or not. Mark says everybody was there, and I have every reason to believe Mark, but I don't know if everybody was there. I do know that Mark was a preacher. And sometimes when preachers tell stories, oh, this is a dirty little secret. Some of you already know it, apparently. Sometimes when preachers tell stories, we round up. We don't lie, we just remember big. That's what preachers do, we remember big. And that's why you never ask a preacher to count a crowd. You never ask a preacher to count a crowd. Last week in the first service, the guys who do a great job every week of counting, we have to keep track of that. They counted, but they didn't write it down in the books downstairs. It was the end of the month, they need to be turned in. So I just made a guess to turn in because I had to turn in the numbers. And in the first service, looking out across the sanctuary, I said, that's about 150 people. And so I sent in 150. Found out a few days later it was 118. And so you never ask a preacher to count a crowd. This looks like about 350 people to me right now, okay? You never ask a preacher to count a crowd. That's what Mark's doing in this story. The preacher is counting the crowd. But regardless, whether everybody was there or not, Mark wants us to know that a lot of people, that the riverbank was full, a lot of people gathered there on that day. One by one, each of them waited their turn. Each of them shuffled down the rocky slopes. Each of them waded out into the water. Each of them found their footing. Each of them confessed their sins. Each of them, John took them by the hand and plunged them into the Jordan. And as each of them came up out of the Jordan, each one of them felt a little bit of the something that their ancestors felt generations before. Each of them felt a little bit of future, a little bit of freedom, a little bit of life, a little bit of home. And in the mix that day, in the middle of all the crowds there on the riverbank, was Jesus of Nazareth. Now, at this point, Jesus is a 30-year-old man. He's a carpenter from Nazareth. He hasn't made a splash yet. And the people who knew him, they just knew him as Joseph's son. And so, like everyone else, Jesus waited his turn. Like everyone else, Jesus stepped off of the bank. Like everyone else, Jesus shuffled down the rocky slopes. Like everyone else, Jesus waded out into the water. Like everyone else, Jesus found his footing. Like everyone else, John took him by the hand. And like everyone else, John plunged him into the current of the Jordan. But this is where the story takes a turn, and Jesus' story is unlike everyone else. Verse 10, Mark says, just as Jesus was coming up out of the water. See, folks, Mark is focused on Jesus coming up out of the water. Mark doesn't say that Jesus went down into the water. Obviously, Jesus went down into the water, or else he couldn't have come up out of the water. But Mark doesn't tell us that part, because the part that Mark is focused on, the part that Mark is zeroing in on, is the importance of what happens when Jesus comes up out of the water. So as soon as Jesus is pulled up out of the water, Mark says, heaven opened. Mark says that Jesus saw heaven open. Mark doesn't tell us whether or not everybody else saw it or not. We don't know if everybody saw it or not, but Jesus saw heaven opened. Now, folks, at the beginning of the book of Luke, at the beginning of the story of the book of Luke, heaven opens up over a field where there were some shepherds working the night shift. We know that story. We know that story well. When Mark tells his gospel, Mark doesn't give us a nativity story. When Mark begins his, Jesus is already a 30-year-old man right off the bat. So Mark doesn't give us a story of heaven opening up over a field where some shepherds worked the night shift. Instead, Mark gives us a story at the beginning of his gospel of heaven opening up over the Jordan River at Jesus' baptism. Heaven opened. I don't know what heaven opening looks like. I don't know if it looks like just a split in the sky where a seam comes open. I don't know if it looks like a door comes ajar in the clouds somewhere. I don't know what heaven opening looks like. Whatever it was that separates heaven and earth, whatever the barrier, whatever the blockade, whatever that is that dams up heaven and holds heaven back from us, whatever that is, was ripped wide open. So that for that moment, there was nothing between heaven and earth. There was nothing separating heaven and earth. There was nothing holding heaven back from earth. Heaven and earth were one. One dimension, one reality. The dam was open and heaven rushed in. Folks, think of it this way. When Jesus was baptized with water, earth got baptized with heaven. And Mark says that the Spirit of God came upon Jesus in the form of a dove. And one writer says, I like this, one writer says that the Spirit rushed down like a dive bomber. The Spirit of God rushed down on Jesus like a dive bomber. Landed on Jesus to fill him, to empower him for everything in this journey that's going to lie ahead for Jesus from this point forward. And then came a voice, the voice of God the Father. God the Father speaking directly to God the Son. Not speaking about him to everyone else there, but this is God the Father speaking directly to God the Son. And this really is a most intimate, personal conversation. And it almost, I don't know about you when you read it, but when I read it, it almost feels kind of awkward. Kind of like I'm eavesdropping, like I'm overhearing this very personal moment, this private one-on-one between a father and a son. And it almost makes me want to look the other way and just let them have their moment. What God the Father says to God the Son is, "You are my son. I love you. I'm pleased with you." Folks, here's what this is. Here's an old word for you. This is doting. God the Father is doting over God the Son. He is excessively fond. He is heaping affirmation. He is opening his heart. He is expressing his affection. God the Father is doting over God the Son. Now, whether my kids like it or not, I'm a doter. Sometimes when my kids are Bible quizzing or they're playing sports or at their piano recital or at school or sometimes just out of the blue for no reason at all, I will publicly yell out, "That's my baby!" in front of everybody. And a few people laugh like you just did when I do that because they think I'm trying to be funny, but I'm not. And my kids, they roll their eyes and they bury their heads, kind of like they have just now. And because they think that I'm trying to embarrass them, but I'm not. It's to the point where whenever we go somewhere, they can feel that it's about to happen. They can anticipate it. And I say, "Daddy, please don't, please don't, please don't." But I can't help it. You know why I can't help it? I can't help it because that's my baby. One day when I'm gone, my kids can either say, "He didn't express himself very much, and he never really told us what he thought about us." My kids could say that. Or my kids could say, "He went overboard and embarrassed the daylights out of us every chance that he got, and we knew that he loved us." And the truth is, I just want them to know God the Father just wanted God the Son to know. This story, this is the "that's my baby" kind of a moment. And sometimes I'll say these exact words over my own kids. "You're my son," or "You're my daughter, and I love you and I'm pleased with you." Parents, why not? Why not speak these same words over your children? If God the Father can say these words, "You're my son, you're my daughter, I love you, I'm pleased with you." If God the Father can say that over the Son, you can say these words to your son or your daughter. In fact, how about some homework? Between now and next Sunday, parents, I want to encourage you to say to your son or your sons, "You're my son, I love you, I'm pleased with you." Or to say to your daughter, "You're my daughter, I love you, and I'm pleased with you." I want you to say that to them. And folks, I want you to know, I don't care how old your child is. Your kid can be 65 years old. Still, I want you to say it to him. You go ahead and do it. That's your homework between now and next Sunday. And if you want some extra credit, okay, here's the extra credit. Find a public moment to yell out, "That's my baby!" Folks, there's something about these words. There's something about these words that builds something in a person. That's what God the Father was up to in this story. He's building something in Jesus. And whatever that is that God the Father is trying to build into Jesus, that's what I want to build in my own kids. See, God the Father is saying to the Son, "You are mine. I love you. And nothing is going to change that. Nothing is going to change that." And what God the Father was seeking to do to build in God the Son, that's what I want to build in my own children so that wherever they go and whatever they do and whatever happens in their lives, they're going to know that they're mine and that I love them and that there's nothing that's going to change that. And folks, here's the most beautiful thing about this blessing. These words of blessing that the Father speaks over the Son is that he spoke these words at the very beginning in Mark chapter 1. God the Father spoke these words at the very beginning. Yes, Jesus is a 30-year-old man at this point, at the beginning of Mark, but he still hasn't done one thing yet in terms of ministry. He hasn't done anything yet. No bodies have been healed. No messages have been preached. Not one Pharisee has been put in his place yet. There's no multiplying loaves and fishes. None of that's happened yet. Nothing has happened ministry-wise yet in Jesus' life. And yet still God the Father says this blessing over the Son. You know, it would have made sense the way our minds work. It would have made sense if it would have played out a different way. If the story in Mark had gone like this, Jesus did all that stuff, right? He spent his 3 years healing and doing signs and miracles and obedience and all of these things that he lived it, he did it, he spent his life, he went to the cross, he suffered, and as he was dying on the cross, then heaven opened up and the Father said, "Oh, Son, you are mine and I love you and I'm pleased with you. I'm pleased with everything you've done." See, it would have made a lot of sense if the story had played out that way, where the Father said that he's pleased with him at the end after everything that he's done. But that's not the way that it played out. The beautiful thing about this story is that these words of love and blessing came before Jesus did anything to deserve them. God's love for Jesus is not contingent on anything that Jesus did. Jesus didn't have to do anything to earn it first. It was already there from the very beginning. Folks, you know what that is. That is grace. That is unconditional love. And God the Father, feeling that way about God the Son, gives us a little bit of a window into how he feels about us as well. So here we have this beautiful, powerful, majestic, holy moment. We're at the bank of the Jordan River. Heaven has opened up. Jesus has just been baptized. The Spirit has descended like a dove. The words of God the Father being spoken over Jesus. This is a beautiful, powerful, majestic, holy moment. And it would be nice to just stay in that moment and soak it up, to be able to stay there. But Mark won't let us. See, one of the things you should know about Mark, I'm going to be teaching the teens starting this Wednesday night. We're going to go through the Gospel of Mark. So teens, I want to see you here. But one of the things everybody needs to know about Mark is that Mark's always in a hurry telling stories. Mark's always in a big hurry. So Mark won't let us stay on that riverbank soaking up the holy moment. Verse 12, "At once the Spirit sent Jesus into the wilderness for 40 days, being tempted by Satan with wild animals." Talk about a downer. Going from as good as it gets to the worst possible scenario. Jesus went from hearing God the Father speak words of blessing over him to spending 6 weeks with Satan in the desert. One minute he is drenched in the Jordan, the next minute he is drip drying in the desert. It's like one minute you're in the maternity ward and the next minute you're in the cancer ward. Jesus was sent into the desert with the devil and he went there into the wild, untamed chaos, animals foaming at the mouth, Satan tempting him. He went there because God the Father sent him there. He went from paradise to struggle. He went from elation to temptation. He went from everybody to isolation. He went from beloved to tested. Jesus was sent from the Jordan into the wilderness for one reason, because he had work to do, God's work. The Holy Spirit snatched Jesus right up and out of that water, straight into the wilderness, into the presence of Satan, into the work of God. You see, this story begins 3 years of Jesus' work. Hard work. Kingdom work. Jesus' baptism was his starting point. Jesus' baptism was his launching pad. It was the springboard for Jesus into ministry that sent Jesus into God's mission, into God's work in the world. Jesus' baptism propelled him into the work of God. Work that was not easy work. Work that wasn't easy work. Folks, this story tells us, if it tells us anything, it tells us that doing the work of the Lord is not easy work. Jesus went right to work from his baptism into the desert, and his work was not easy. He went right into the presence of Satan being tempted. You know, I know there are some folks who just automatically make this assumption. If it's easy, it is God's will. And if it is not easy, then it is not God's will. Wrong. Wrong assumption. This story really does tell us otherwise, doesn't it? This story tells us that doing the work of the Lord is not easy work. Jesus went right to work, and it wasn't easy. Several years ago, I was part of a round table video conversation between pastors. They gathered up some pastors from around the country and put us in a circle and put on microphones and cameras and lights and got us talking. And we were talking about ministry and strategy and what we're doing and just having this conversation with each other. And the whole idea was that they were going to take this video and release it as a training tool for pastors, to help pastors and to help churches, that type of thing. So they had us in the circle, they turned the cameras on, and we're going, and the conversation's good, and it's pleasant, and everybody's nice, and everybody's sharing some helpful stuff, and it's just, everything's going so very well. And at the end of the conversation, one of the pastors in the room started talking about what he tells people. He tells people in his church and in his community, he asks them this question: how can I make church easy for you? That's what he asked me. How can I make church easy for you? Because they said, that's what I want to do. I want to make church easy for people. I want to do that. And I looked around the circle. I thought, anybody going to say anything to that? Okay, I guess it's me. I raised my hand. And I said, I don't. I don't ask people how I can make church easy for them. Because for my folks, I don't want easy. I want them to follow Jesus. And following Jesus, not easy. I'm telling you, folks, there's about 30 minutes of silence after that. All the pastors were really nice until that happened. And to this day, that video hasn't been released. And I think it's my fault. Folks, this story tells us that Jesus' baptism didn't send him into easy. Jesus' baptism sent him into God's mission in the world. In the middle of the desert with Satan being tempted. It's not easy, but it's good. Doing the work of the Lord, it's not easy, but it's holy. It's not easy, but it's right. It's not easy, but it's beautiful. It's not easy, but it is life-giving. God sent Jesus into struggle, into the place where Satan was. And this is just Mark chapter 1. This is just the beginning. If this is any indication, you got 15 more chapters after this. If this is any indication, things are going to be pretty tough. It's going to be a hard journey for Jesus from this point forward. But here's the good news for Jesus. Before God the Father sent him into struggle, he went dripping wet from his baptism, drenched in heaven, dive-bombed by the Spirit, doted over by the Father to make him ready for that struggle. And it's the same for you, and it's the same for me. We are sent into struggle. That's not news for you, is it? Every day's a struggle. We are sent into the world where Satan is. We are tempted day in and day out. Life is not easy. But here's the good news for you and for me. We are sent dripping wet from our baptism. We are sent drenched in heaven. We are sent dive-bombed by the Spirit, doted over by the Father to make us ready for the struggle that we face in this life. And that is the good news. Church, would you stand with me? Got any struggles? I know you do. Does it feel like you're spending your life in the desert with Satan? That's probably because you are. Understand, you've been sent there by God. But understand that you don't go alone. God has given you His very self. This is what baptism's about. This is what the Spirit filling us is about. This is what the words of affirmation from God the Father are all about. We're sent into struggle, but we're sent with everything that we need to endure the struggle that we face. You are sent with everything you need to endure the struggle you face. Folks, the Apostle Paul said it. The one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. The one who is in you is greater than the one who's in the world. And I'll say it one more time. The one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. And I think so many of us need to hear that and be reminded of that this morning. I'm going to lead us in prayer. The altar's open. I'm just going to ask that you would be obedient to the Lord. If you want to come and meet with Him and pray, then you come and do that. If you want to be seated, stand, pray where you are, I invite you to do that this morning.